The Off the Ball Podcast Network. The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Sexton promotes at the 10-meter line. It's spinning.
It looks good.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton.
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
You're very welcome along to this Tuesday's show here at the Rugby World Cup show on Off the Ball. Tuesday of quarter-final week as well. Ireland against New Zealand this Saturday morning. This day next week, we will be having a Rugby World Cup show, either looking back on another Irish quarter-final exit, or who knows, Will, could we be looking at the first ever Irish quarter-final win at a World Cup and the greatest one ever against New Zealand?
I'm loving your optimism in the intro on this one, Neil. I think anyone who's realistic will probably say this is going to be yet another quarterfinal defeat, but one has to take some solace from the fact that two of the last three games, albeit Ireland were in different form when they played New Zealand in Soldier Field in 2016 and at the Aviva Stadium last November, Ireland have still managed to find a way to frustrate New Zealand, and particularly Andy Farrell's defence with the Lions tour a couple of years ago as well was able to restrict New Zealand's attack. And I think we have to put all our eggs in that basket that Farrell has a plan to go into shutdown again this weekend in Tokyo.
And look, as well, far be it from me to blow smoke up my own hole here now, right, but, you know, it was only a couple of weeks ago after that Japan game where I pointed out France in 2011 lost against Tonga. They went on and got to the final. That was a massive upset. 4 years ago, South Africa beaten by Japan. They got to a semi-final. I mean, I'm not saying I was right, but...
You were right.
I was definitely right, and... Okay, look, all joking aside, it's going to be an enormous challenge this weekend. Ireland will be doing incredibly well. Will be doing the best they've ever done if they could possibly win this game at the weekend. It's not the quarterfinal that Irish fans wanted. They wanted to play South Africa.
They're all having to swap their tickets right now, which is
That is the fun of it as well. But look, there obviously are a ton of other fans as well that are happy to swap their tickets for their quarterfinals. But all jokes aside, we will be looking ahead to the Ireland New Zealand World Cup quarterfinal on today's show. We'll be chatting to Owen Sheehan, insect fingers himself in Japan. We'll also catch up with Jamie Wall, rugby writer in New Zealand, who has been on this show as well a couple of weeks ago before the World Cup. He's been following the All Blacks around Japan over the last few weeks. Any questions for Jamie for what's coming out of the New Zealand camp, leave a comment for us on our YouTube or Facebook streams, or you can get us at Off the Ball on Twitter. We're currently streaming as well across all of our social platforms and on OTB Sports Radio, and all our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in. Will with me in studio today. Plenty bits over the last 24 hours, Will. Still waiting on official confirmation from the RFU whether or not they're going to appeal Bundiaki's three-game suspension after his red card was upheld yesterday. They're waiting for the official written report to come out to make up their mind. They said yesterday in a statement, a very short statement, that they're disappointed and they were going to wait and see. I see Simon Easterby today speaking to the media. He wasn't really giving much away either. It's hard to see what is going to be said in this written report
that's going to differ from the first four lines we saw yesterday.
Yeah, and it was fairly complete. Like, I mean, direct contact with the player's shoulder to the head. They did not accept there was a low degree of danger. They say even though it happened quickly, the player's tackle height was high.
I think that's fairly crucial, Neil, the fact that you're looking for something to mitigate here if you're making an Irish appeal, and it's already been very clearly outlined that
there are no clear and obvious mitigating factors.
Yeah, they didn't find that Bundiaki, even though it was a last minute maybe change in direction as he was going into the tackle, they felt that he could have possibly changed his tackle shape. He's led in high. They've been consistent in terms of punishing this throughout the tournament as well. I would think it's extremely unlikely he gets that ban reduced.
Yeah, I'd almost feel that the only way of getting it overturned at this stage on appeal would be if there was a mistake made in the actual process.
If the referee's written it down incorrectly or something.
Yeah, if there is a technical error in the way things have been written out and stuff like that.
I thought, like, on the pitch, Nick Berry explained the infraction very carefully and very concisely, and as you say, we got our statement from World Rugby yesterday in terms of what the disciplinary committee found. And like, unless there's been some kind of clerical error, I think Bundiaki is missing the rest of this Rugby World Cup. It's interesting, they are keeping him around to train, and he is entitled to train during this period as well. And Simon Easterby was saying earlier today that perhaps Bundiaki can actually be a very important player for them now in terms of just what he can bring to training, maybe getting over that disappointment of the suspension himself. And then on top of that, he's giving some insider knowledge on a country where he grew up in New Zealand as well, and maybe a bit of the insider knowledge he might have of some of the players on the New Zealand team. So it's kind of an intriguing situation where Bundiaki's in this kind of twilight zone at the moment, but the Irish coaching team feeling he's still massively important, to use Simon Easterby's words.
Yeah, and look, in comparison to 4 years ago, Sean O'Brien was suspended as well, but Sean O'Brien was one of a number of players that had been pretty much ruled out after that France game with Paul O'Connell. Did you have Tommy Bowe as well, Peter O'Mahony, like so many injuries picked up. Yep. In the grand scheme of things, I think if you had offered a lot of Irish fans, you come through that game against Samoa, Bundiaki is the only player that is going to miss the quarterfinal. I think a lot of people probably would have taken it, given just how much you're worrying about getting those bodies through healthily into a quarterfinal.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, like, Rob Kearney had been carrying that groin injury from last week, and that's, it seems, why Jordan Larmour started. All indications seem to be after the game with what Joe Schmidt said, that Rob Kearney comes back in. We remember Rob Kearney coming back into great effect at Soldier Field in 2016 at a time when maybe his form had dipped off at provincial and international level, and then it kick-started another good run of form for Rob Kearney. So I think there's a very good chance he plays a 15 this weekend, despite how well Larmour has played in his two games at fullback so far. Robbie Henshaw obviously got important minutes into his legs last weekend. Joey Carberry's coming back towards full fitness. Joey Carberry, I thought, made a very good cameo from the bench against Samoa at the weekend as well. You would think that he's the backup fly half for this weekend. And then, you know, aside from that, Peter O'Mahony's knocks have probably, I would say, he'll have come on from the fact that he got a rest last weekend as well. Ireland have got pretty much their entire squad to pick from for this week, which is, as you say, a very stark contrast to the walking wounded that was the team going into Argentina, where you had to make fundamental big switches due to injury and suspension for that game.
Also, another little bit of news saying Nigel Owens refereeing the game. Pascal Gauthier and Australia's Angus Gardner are going to be his assistants on the day this weekend, and England's Graeme Hughes will be TMO. The other referees for the quarterfinals, Jerome Garces is going to be taking charge of England and Australia. Then Jaco Paper in his 50th test, that's going to be Wales and France. And the other quarterfinal, then Wayne Barnes is going to be on the man in the middle with Japan against South Africa. Nigel Owens, what are the thoughts on that? Off the top of my head, kind of seems like it might just be playing into New Zealand's hands a little bit more.
Possibly. And Ian Foster was up today and he was saying, look, we've got a top-class referee for a top-class game. We're more than happy with him. Understandably, even if Ireland had any issues with the fact that Owens is in the middle, you're not going to hear the coaching team or the players say anything about the referee 4 or 5 days before the game. They're going to say, look, he's a good referee and we're happy enough with this. It's all about how we play on the field.
But yeah, no doubt we're going to hear a couple of bits of what Joe Schmidt has to say. He just kind of drops in those little small little pebbles into press conferences, things to think about. Owen Sheehan is on the line with us at the moment from Japan. Owen, we were just talking there about Nigel Owens refereeing. It seems Simon Easterby and Ian Foster, you were at both press conferences today, neither of them giving away really too much about their thoughts on Owens refereeing.
No, but what Will said is the correct way to approach any refereeing question this week is to not really say anything. But Joe Schmidt did the exact opposite of that in the lead-up to the Japan game, I'm sure you'll both remember, with the Angus Gardner comments in the lead-up to that, which clearly didn't play into Ireland's favour. So I would be astonished if he made the same mistake twice and said anything against Nigel Owens. But also, on a more basic level, is that Nigel Owens is a brilliant referee and that there isn't too much to give out about when it comes to Nigel Owens. But yeah, Ian Foster is pretty happy with that appointment, I think it's fair to say. And as was Simon Easterby, actually. I don't think anybody's going to be giving out too much about Nigel Owens.
Yeah, one good point on Owens, courtesy of Andy McGeady, who'd be a friend of Off the Balls, coming in doing paper reviews every now for us. But he pointed out that Nigel Owens, he's averaging the fewest number of penalties of any referee in the World Cup at the moment. That obviously leads to a longer ball in play time, which is probably something that is going, that New Zealand are going to be a lot happier about. I would imagine Ireland would want to kind of have someone maybe like Wayne Barnes, who's a little bit more whistle happy
and things, yeah.
A little bit more finicky, because, you know, Wayne Barnes was refereeing when Ireland beat New Zealand back in back in November of last year, and I was just quickly looking through the penalty count. I think it was 13 penalties New Zealand gave away to Ireland's 4 or 5 on the night.
On a night when Ireland used the ball very cleverly as well. They actually rested in possession quite a bit during that game, and I'm sure, you know, Joe Schmidt would be delighted, whatever the tries last weekend against Samoa, the fact that Ireland finally got a proper domination in terms of territory and possession last weekend, and maybe the way they played for quite a bit of the Scotland game as well. They need something like that, but even at a higher level this weekend, if they've got any chance against New Zealand. If New Zealand get the ball to their backs, Ireland are in massive trouble. The whole idea is Ireland have to keep the ball away from them as much as they possibly can.
Oh, and the other big news of coming out of today, even before we get on to Ireland, is that World Rugby have sent Scottish Rugby to the naughty step.
Yeah, like this is a fairly bizarre story. Like, you guys might actually be more on top of this, because this was coming through when I was at the press conferences earlier on. And, like, I mean, it's not surprising whatsoever, the fact that they've done this. I mean, the fact that they've responded badly to, you know, somebody almost accusing you of the dark arts when it comes to administration in the biggest tournament of your sport. So it's got a bad look for Scottish Rugby this entire tournament, starting from the very start, the way they came in, fairly brazen, saying that they've got an opportunity to win the World Cup, or at least that's what they're going for. Kind of fairly bullish as well in the lead up to the Ireland game, and then they got swept away by Ireland. And then this last week, it has not looked well upon Scotland whatsoever. The talk from Gregor Townsend in the lead up to it, to be fair, that specific moment, I kind of had a little bit of sympathy for him. And then this whole talk that they would take World Rugby through the courts or whatever it may be, they would take legal action if their game was called off, sounded like a bit like sour grapes before sour grapes were even required. I think fair enough if you wanted to press the nuclear button after that, go on a PR offensive before the thing was actually called off, actually said it sort of stuff. They were fanning the flames, and we saw Jamie Joseph's reaction on Friday as well. World Rugby not happy, naturally. Who could blame them?
Yeah, I don't know, like, does it seem a little bit petty? I know what you're saying, that they're kind of accusing World Rugby maybe of the dark arts and, you know, arranging things to suit themselves. I don't know, it just feels a little bit petty on quarterfinal week.
Maybe it is, but at the same time, you've got an administration to save here. You've got kind of the suggestion that perhaps they would be favouring a home nation, even though really Japan aren't calling the shot here at all. It just happens to be in Japan. And I just think that perhaps World Rugby got the upper hand here. Maybe they're taking the ball and running with it, which maybe doesn't reflect too well on them either. But I think Scotland have not covered themselves in glory here whatsoever. I think that they always knew the risk they were going to take when they said that stuff about World Rugby last week. The problem is, I think Scotland just genuinely believed that the game wouldn't go ahead. I genuinely believe that they didn't think they'd be eating humble pie this week when A, the game did go ahead, World Rugby managed to get this thing over the line, and B, they ended up getting beaten. Granted, the second half performance, or the fourth quarter performance, managed to save some face. It could have been a hell of a lot worse. It could have been going home with an absolute thrashing being given to them by Japan, but at least they managed to get a couple of tries in the second half.
Owen, you were obviously there last week when it seemed, kind of when Scotland were putting out those legal, when they were floating the kites at least about legal action on Friday, it seemed at that stage the game wasn't going to go ahead though, did it?
Yeah, it didn't really. And on Saturday it looked even less likely when the typhoon had hit, when an earthquake was registered just off the coast of Chiba. Like, I think I was on Twitter and saying that there's no way people would be stepping outside their house tomorrow, let alone actually going to a stadium play professional sport. And I thought it was an absolutely ludicrous idea that 70,000 people might be deemed safe enough to attend Yokohama International Stadium and watch a rugby match. But all those things ended up happening. It's an absolute miracle that this thing happened. That first of all, that the weather managed to turn on its head completely, that Sunday was an absolutely beautiful day, and also that the emergency services managed to clear the way in Yokohama, a stadium that was flooding directly outside its front door, in time for a game on Sunday. And that all just fed into Japan's favour, like, mainly because it fell against Scotland, mainly because they were made to look a little bit foolish before a ball was even kicked on Sunday, I think it's fair to say. As soon as this game went ahead, people like me were made to look a bit foolish when we thought the game was going to go ahead. But Scotland in particular, they not only believed that the game wasn't going to go ahead, they were about to sue World Rugby for the game not going ahead. And all of a sudden, they've got to take to the pitch. So I would say that the talk was very different in those dressing rooms last week. I'd say Jamie Joseph was saying to his lads, listen, this game is 100% going ahead. We have to be in that mindset. Whereas with Scotland, perhaps, it wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm. All right, we are head first into a quarterfinal week. You've been busy at the press conferences the last couple of days. Is it starting to feel now, Owen, like the atmosphere is starting to shift a bit, that we're into the heavy business now? We've finished with the shadow boxing?
Yeah, completely. Even at the press conferences, you can just notice the amount of microphones has doubled on the top table now. You got to get there early to get your microphone in. It's it doesn't even feel like that, Neil. It's actually just been directly said by all the players and all the management that this is perhaps the biggest week in all of our lives. And it's like we've all been clinging to this hope that, you know, Ireland would be able to rebound from a pool stage win, kind of like we saw in 2011, kind of like we saw in 2015. The problem is, what's the one team that those teams didn't beat in 11 and 15? It was the All Blacks. So it's not just a quarterfinal week. It's a quarterfinal week against the All Blacks. There is just a double the amount of history here on the line for Ireland. But the main thing you would say is this kind of weight of history that it is the quarterfinal, because they would have openly said, if you asked them a year ago, where do you want to finish the World Cup? And they certainly wouldn't have wanted to get knocked out in a World Cup quarterfinal, knowing that even South Africa or New Zealand would be waiting on the doorstep. There's no question about it. We've got a much tougher fixture this week. Even after some of the negativity in the pool stages, this just hammers it home to a lower level once again. This is not South Africa. This is the All Blacks, and they're playing bloody well. They play a style of rugby that aren't going to suit Ireland. We would have much suited the South African way. The thing is, how much can we learn from what Japan did to us? How much can you actually take what New Zealand are doing and just kind of make that kind of a more complicated or a better version of what Japan are doing? Like, they're not a million miles away, and I wonder if that Japan defeat stylistically will actually help Ireland, will actually get them prepared for the barrage that's coming to them. Don't let the ball in play too long, don't let the ball get to the backs. That's an ideal that works against Japan, and it's certainly one that we'll need to implement against the All Blacks.
Myself and Will were chatting there. Ireland, they've been keeping their powder dry on whether or not they're appealing Bundiaki's suspension. What is the latest? Have we heard anything in the last while? Are we expecting to know anything today?
No. Within the next 48 hours is what was said earlier on at the press conference. So I'd be surprised if we heard anything tonight. Then again, I'm not sure what the delay could possibly be. Like, as Will said there, pretty much know the thrust of it from last night. I'm not sure what the full report is going to throw up that is going to be any bit surprising or anything like that. The question is, where is the baseline here for Bundiaki? It seemed from their perspective it was a 6-week baseline punishment. So maybe, this is just my theory, I'm not hearing this through the grapevine or anything, maybe Irish Rugby are thinking to themselves, well, if the baseline is actually a 3-week ban, which some people actually might be able to make the case for, that his tackle was actually only worth a 3-week ban, then if you add in the good behaviour that was cited in yesterday's press release, then suddenly you reduce it to a 2-week or a 1-week ban. That is probably what I think, if they're going to appeal, that they might be hoping for. I would be absolutely astonished if Bundiaki was available this weekend. But as you said, Easterby was talking earlier on, says he's going to play a vital role in training this week. It's funny that he says that, because Jonathan Sexton was saying that 4 years ago, that was one of the big reasons why the injuries hit them hard in the Argentina week, was that the quality of training was actually quite poor. They had coaches, they had media man in training against the players. It was farcical, really. It was just beyond the realms of possibility in some occasions, just how we managed to lose all those bodies last time. So at least Aki will be able to train. The quality of training won't be affected this week.
And if that suspension is upheld again, even on appeal, is there a point when Aki actually has to leave the squad?
Don't think so, Neil. No, as far as the Irish Rugby are concerned, he can hang around and he can stay. And I wasn't of the impression that it was just pending appeal, but it seems that he's okay to hang around. Like, if you're talking about potential replacements, then somebody who actually needs to take to the park, it's probably Rory Scannell, who's next man up at this stage. And that might be an option that they might look to take if somehow they manage to win this game this weekend. Because, as I was saying earlier on, and you guys well know, it's a complicated path now. It's not just the All Blacks, it's England after that, if we were to win at the weekend. This ain't the Springboks and Wales back-to-back anymore. This is suddenly a much tougher path, and maybe actually having 31 players who can actually play on match day might be better than 30 players plus one man who can train. But I'm sure it will be a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic problem to have if that's something they are analysing after Saturday.
Oh, and Sheen, you're providing perfect material for Michael Checa in Australia there. You've just written them off.
Well, yeah, good point there. I certainly have. What do you think? Like, I mean, it's not necessarily clear cut that they're going to win that. I would say that they're as big an outsider as we are in the quarterfinals, no?
I think so, yeah. Like, I mean, we haven't really seen anything from Australia on so far that would indicate that they're going to beat England. England have kind of gone about their pool in a very mechanical way. They'll be rested, obviously, from having that extra break, which Eddie Jones said he really enjoyed. I think by his own admission, he said, we've had one tough game, couple of easy games, a break. We couldn't be any better set up. But I just kind of wonder with Australia, who can produce big performances, obviously, in big matches, where they'll relish the chance to maybe stuff all that back down Eddie Jones' throat. It's going to be plenty of smack talk, I think, before and after the game between both Jones and Cheka. It gives that game a little bit of extra spice going into this weekend as well.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter there earlier on saying the post-match interview for the losing coach is just going to be the most magnificent thing ever.
A masterclass in gracefulness, I think that's what it was described as.
Australia needs to just, you know, do what they did in the second half against Wales, but just do it in both halves. And even that against England might not be good enough. England are fairly ruthless. That's going to be one hell of a semi-final, you'd imagine, against the All Blacks if things go the way people expect them to go. But there's surely going to be one upset in the quarterfinals. Like, if you're looking at, if you're pinpointing one at the moment, it's hard to look past Japan perhaps upsetting South Africa 4 years on from the last time they did it. But part of me just thinks that there's no way the Springboks will ever let that happen to them ever again, let alone in this World Cup, when it's probably still very, very raw for a lot of those South African players. I don't think they will let that happen this weekend. And maybe it is us. Maybe it is the Aussies who sweep on it. Maybe it is the French. And if you are looking for an upset, sometimes it is French you need to look for. It's going to be an unbelievable weekend of rugby, and I can't wait for it. Every game just has so many different layers that just bring so much excitement. But then at the same time, I would say if you did a straw poll of rugby fans around the world, you probably have 60-65% leaning towards the victor in every single game at the moment. There is a clear favourite and a clear underdog in all the quarterfinals.
Owen, before we leave you go as well, you were out at New Zealand's press conference this morning. Ian Foster, the New Zealand attack coach, was up for chats. Not too many chats, though. He seems to be a man of few words.
Yeah, he certainly is, Neil, as I found out. The latest thing on my things I've learned in Japan list is never ask a question at an Ian Foster press conference. he made me look like a right mug, really. I think I kind of misquoted him. I asked him a question. Somebody else as well asked him about Andy Farrell and said, how does Andy Farrell's defence have such good success against you? And he was like, just need to ask him, mate. And when somebody from the Southern Hemisphere uses the word mate, you know, you better pack up your things and get as far away as possible.
Owen, thanks so many for joining us. We'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, lads. Chat to you.
Cheers, mate.
Bye.
there's Owen there. Yeah, no, looking back on a little bit of what Ian Foster had to say, certainly is a man of few words. Pretty much every question was kind of like just batted back to the reporter.
Yeah, it was like, what do you think about Bundyaki? No, we're focusing ourselves.
We can actually play a little bit of him here now. Here is Ian Foster talking about, when he was asked about Ireland's potential style of play this weekend.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's one tactic that's good or bad. I think it's how you use it in terms of during the game. But certainly, you know, we've got a do or die game against Ireland. They're a high retention team, so they like to hold the ball. And they'll use a kick when they feel they're under pressure or they sense weakness. So, you know, we're not expecting a barrage of kicking. We're expecting a team that'll want to hold the ball and a lot of rucks and a lot of tackles. So that's their style. And, you know, we've got to just, like I said earlier, we've just got to prepare for what we see on Saturday and go and do what we need to do. Sorry, I missed that. Pretty good, really. I mean, a lot's been made of their performance against Japan, and I think if you flip that over, you'd probably got to really pat Japan on the back for that game. Well, they played really, really well. But I think if you look at, you know, like Japan beat Scotland by 7, and that's a great win, but Ireland were pretty ruthless against Scotland and really put them away when they needed to, and they looked good against Samoa with 14 men. So I'm pretty sure they'll be primed and ready.
Yeah, New Zealand attack coach there, Ian Foster. We managed to get 90-odd seconds of him speaking.
About 7 questions in that 90 seconds, give or take.
They're keeping their cards fairly close to their chest, though. A couple of tweets and messages coming into us. From Wolf Tickets, if the All Blacks lose to anyone, I'd prefer it to be the Irish. I presume Wolf tickets isn't actually Irish.
Yeah, it must be from New Zealand.
Because I would imagine most
Irish people would be
most Irish people would be delighted about that. Wilder's equaliser, Ireland, why so arrogant? LOL, you just lost to Japan. How in the world are you going to beat the All Blacks? And that leads me nicely into Jamie Wall, who's joined us on the line. Jamie, I don't know, did you hear me reading that message out there? How in the world are Ireland going to beat the All Blacks?
I did hear that message. That's it's pretty...
Did you send that in?
Sorry?
Did you send that in to us?
No, I didn't. No. That would have been a nice little segue, but no, I didn't. I think if Ireland want to beat the All Blacks, I think they should just play like the two out of the three last games they have played against the All Blacks, which they've won. And I think a combination of both of those performances will do it. You know, I talked to you guys before the tournament, and I talked to you guys a few weeks ago, and I said then and the other time that I still believe the Ireland are a very, very, very good side. Yes, they lost to Japan, but I think that says more about Japan than it does about Ireland. I think there's a lot of worried people back in New Zealand right now because a lot of us just always seem to think about is the last result we had against certain teams. That's why we worry about Ireland and we don't worry about Wales.
Just to go alongside that as well, Steve Hansen yesterday said he said that he was quite happy to be avoiding Japan. I mean, he didn't directly say he'd rather be facing Ireland, but is that just Steve Hansen kind of being Steve Hansen and, you know, hopping a ball down the road?
Yep, 100%. I was in the room when he said it, and I've been in the room when he said a lot of things like that. I think that the All Blacks would definitely prefer to be playing Japan this weekend. If nothing else, then it would be a fantastic occasion. I think that the level of support that the All Blacks get here, juxtaposed with the actual support the Japanese national team gets here, would make it just an absolutely incredible game to be at and to watch. If that ends up happening, it will be in the final now, which is a long shot, but it could happen. It would be an amazing World Cup final. But I think that, you know, the All Blacks probably hope to be meeting Ireland a little bit further down the track in this one. I think that there was always a possibility that they'll be playing in the quarterfinal, but it hasn't eventuated the way everyone thought it would, which was that the All Blacks might lose their first game and then end up playing Ireland, who would top Pool A. It's just sort of come about a different way. Mm. So I think that while he probably wouldn't want to be playing them now, it was always an eventuality that I've prepared for. It's definitely a game that's going to really grab the attention of everybody worldwide, I think.
I saw you tweeting this morning from the press conference as well. The Irish have arrived. Ian Foster didn't have too much to say to us. We were just listening back to a clip of him there. It seems the Irish kind of took over that press conference as well, did they? Did you get a word in edgeways?
Yep, they did. And I think that's fair enough. I mean, we've been around the All Blacks for a good month now, and I can understand the Irish enthusiasm for getting in there and wanting to ask a few questions. Unfortunately, I don't know if you guys are cricket fans, but Ian Foster really deadbatted pretty much everything that was thrown at him today. So you're never going to get much out of anyone on the Tuesday press conference anyway. There's not really much to talk about. We already talked about the game the weekend before, and they don't name the team until Thursday. So it's just very much a case of just asking how training's going and is anyone injured. So, even if it wasn't a really, really big game, you probably would have got the same answers anyway.
Jamie, in terms of the preparations ahead of this game, I was just reading in the New Zealand media yesterday some of Steve Hansen's comments about the fact that there was obviously no match for the All Blacks last week, and instead they went out and had really intensive sessions to prepare for this Ireland game. What were they up to last Friday?
Yeah, great question. Well, they said they had a hit out against, like an inter-squad hit out, out at the training base that they've got. Exactly how truthful they're being about that, I'm not 100% sure. They can't replicate a test match, even if it was against Italy. So I think what they did was just play a game situation and then just make sure that no one was getting injured. And I think the most important thing that they got out of the weekend is that there was absolutely no chance of anyone getting any red cards or getting suspended. So that's the most important thing they got. I think they knew sort of well in advance that game was probably going to get called off, so they'd prepared something that they were going to be doing. But it was basically just game simulation. Exactly how hard I went, sorry, how hard they went, we'll probably never know.
On this Italy game being cancelled, there's almost kind of been two schools of thought over here, and I think we're going to have one of them regardless of what the outcome is after this weekend, that on one hand, New Zealand have a 13 days rest, whereas Ireland are coming in off the back of a 6 or 7 day turnaround. The other one, though, is that New Zealand, they haven't really played a game in anger since South Africa 4 weeks ago. I think regardless of what result we're going to have this weekend, if New Zealand walk past Ireland, then all the Irish fans are going to be talking about how New Zealand had this great advantage of a weekend off. If Ireland are to beat New Zealand, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of New Zealand fans saying, oh, well, New Zealand hadn't really been tested. They were undercooked. Like, it is just going to play in regardless. Would you have a concern? Would there be a general concern in New Zealand that they haven't really had to play too much rugby?
Yep. That's a definite concern. I think it's offset somewhat by the fact that we went into another very big game, which was the Springbok game, with the top 15 not having played in 3 weeks. So it's a similar kind of situation to that. This is, of course, much different. I mean, you know, if whoever loses this goes home. So, there's a bit of concern about the fact that they are, like you said, undercooked. They would have wanted to get the top team out there on the weekend in the game that should have been played and give them all a good sort of 50-60 minutes each to just sort of reassure everyone and just iron out a few things. There's definitely a couple of players in there that need a bit more rugby, Sonny Bill Williams and Jack Goodhue being the main ones, and of course Brodie Retallick. So key guys for the All Blacks, I'd say Steve Hansen would have wanted them to play in that game. So I'm not seeing it as an exactly like 100% positive for them. And then there's just the case of this, the fact that they just haven't really had anything to do in that whole time. They've been holed up in their hotels the whole time, and they're just sort of probably going a bit stir crazy back there. So, you know, and at the same time, Ireland's game obviously is probably going to cost you Bundy for the weekend, which is really unfortunate. But at the same time, that was a really good hit-out on Saturday night against, what is reasonably inferior Samoan team, pretty disappointing Samoan team. But there was a lot of good stuff to come out of that, I thought.
What's the feeling about Bundiaki not being here for this week? Because, you know, Foster kind of, as you say, played a very straight bat when he was asked about Bundiaki's absence. But you'd imagine, given how well Bundiaki played last November in Dublin in the game between the two sides, it's probably a big boost to New Zealand not to have Bundiaki facing you this weekend.
Yes and no. I think that, obviously there's a lot of depth in the Irish midfield. It's one place where you probably could afford to lose a player. So I don't think too much is getting read into that. You know, of course, you know, from a really cynical New Zealand point of view, for us, Bundiaki is still just a guy who couldn't make it into Super Rugby. So a lot of guys just see him as, well, you know, he's not that big a threat, really. But as you said, he did play fantastically well in that last game that when Ireland did beat the All Blacks. From my opinion, I don't think you guys are losing much by putting him out. And that's not a reflection on him. It's a reflection of the guys that can come and replace him. You got Robbie Henshaw coming back and Gary Ringrose as well. So, I mean, they're both, you know, world-class players. So, while it would be great to have Bundy there because it's just a nice, like, storyline from a New Zealand perspective, it's not the end of the world from an Irish one, from where we're sitting anyway.
What's been the general consensus back home in New Zealand on the way things have gone so far? Obviously, that first game against South Africa, professional performance, clinical in those few moments when they were actually given some chances to score points. And after that, I mean, pretty much ran through Canada. The game against Namibia struggled at times, I think, in the first half. What was it, 10-9 after more than 30 minutes, but pulled away comfortably, obviously, towards the end of that game. What's kind of been the overall take?
I think a lot of people are feeling that it's looking very similar to 2015. If you look at the All Black schedule and the pool stages, obviously they had a tough game first up against a very good Argentinian side in 2015. A side that definitely deserved to make the semi-finals. So it was a tough start, and then they had three with all due respect, you know, pretty soft games, including one against Namibia, where they didn't even score as many points as they did the other night. I think that that first 30 minutes against Namibia was just fantastic from the Africans. I think it says a lot about them more than it does about the All Blacks. They just played played with just immense pride and passion. But it was only ever going to last for, you know, maybe 40 minutes at tops. So, you know, I don't think too much is getting read into those performances whatsoever. I think the most important thing that's coming out of it is that the All Blacks have managed to get through all this without any major injuries. And most importantly, in the context of the tournament, no judicial problems either. And I mean, that's going to be a massive thing going forward. I'd hate it if this this game on Saturday did get decided by a red card or something like that, you know, deep into the game. It would just be a real shame.
Yeah, I think in any of the four quarterfinals this weekend, just the last thing I think anyone wants is for a major decision like that. Not so much they don't want the referee to be making it, they don't want the referee to have to make a decision like that. Just on the refereeing, Nigel Owens appointed referee for this weekend. Obviously Ian Foster wasn't giving away too much on it. In terms of New Zealand, do you think they'd be happy with that selection? Kind of what we were discussing here earlier on is we would say New Zealand probably would be happier than Ireland with Nigel Owens, considering he probably doesn't give out as many penalties as someone like Wayne Barnes. And I think that would probably play a little bit more into New Zealand's hands.
Yeah, that's the general consensus. But I don't look at it like that. I think that, you know, if you start reading into the way referees run games, then you're going to sort of probably do a bit of mental gymnastics on yourself to kind of figure out what's actually going to happen in the game. I mean, he's still a referee. He still has to uphold the law. If something happens, if someone's forearm comes into contact with someone's head, he still has to, you know, even though it's Nigel Owens, he still has to make that call. Otherwise, he's going to get in trouble. I think that the biggest referee thing from the last few days was the way that Ben O'Keefe handled that Japan-Scotland game, because I feel like around the ruck, he let a lot of 50-50 calls just sort of play out. And I think, you know, from my cynical point of view, I think that maybe World Rugby got in his ear and just said, hey man, we need a really good game and do what you can do to make that happen. And I think that if any of the referees going into the quarterfinals need a bit of inspiration, they can just sort of look at the way Ben ran that game, because I think he definitely played a part in what actually eventuated in being arguably the best game of the tournament. I think Scotland deserve a bit of credit as well, you know, for all of the talk about them being the bad guys last week. They definitely entered that game with the right spirit. So I think that on the whole, if both teams show up to play positive rugby, Nigel Owens is the sort of guy that can that will let that sort of game happen. Like I said, I don't think there's going to be too much advantage really looked at from an All Black point of view at having a guy like him in charge. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably something that's going to be played up in the media during the week, but at ground level, it's not really that big a deal.
Mm-hmm. Before the tournament kicked off the week of the New Zealand South Africa game, before we leave you go, you had said you know, you thought that was just going to be a preamble really for a final appearance between the two. Are you still feeling quite confident that that's going to be the way it's going to unfold?
Yeah, I think so. I think that Africa's playing some good footy at the moment. They definitely know how to grind out games, which is what they're going to have to do for the next two. I think that right now I haven't seen enough out of England to make me think that they're really genuine contenders. I think the Wallabies have one good game in them left, and hopefully it's going to be this Saturday. And again, with Wales, I mean, you know, I hate to say it if there's any Welsh people listening, but, I need to see a really, really dominant performance out of them where they really smack someone. So, if they go out and do that to France this weekend, then yeah, I could see that happening. But I think the biggest problem Springboks are going to face getting into the final is this Japanese crowd that they're going to have to come up against on Saturday, because the atmosphere at these games, and I mean just in this entire city, is just molten hot right now. Like the entire country is behind them. The World Cup from an outsider's point of view might not look as though it's been like a massive success. But if you're here on the ground, I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing people in red and white jerseys. And rugby is just everywhere on the trains. Like, it's given this place just the game here just an absolute, absolutely huge boost. So they're going to have to deal with 50,000 of the hottest crowd you're gonna see. And you know, I'm just hoping that we get tickets for that one for Sunday night.
All right, Jamie, thanks a million for joining us, and we'll speak to you again soon, hopefully.
Yep, thank you very much. Take it easy.
Jamie Wall there, looking ahead to Ireland and New Zealand this weekend.
He didn't say mate at the end, which is a good sign.
He didn't, yeah, exactly, as Owen Sheehan pointed out. If a New Zealander or an Aussie says mate to you in any real circumstance, it's probably not a good thing. Mm. It's a bit of passive aggressive in there. A few more texts to get through here as well. Sam Thank says, goodness for Nigel, he's the best man to catch New Zealand and their constant fouling, which most other officials let go because they're too afraid of upsetting the best. I don't know, I think a lot of people will be of the opinion that he's not so much that he's, you know, happy to let New Zealand do what they want, but he's the kind of referee that lets things flow a bit.
Flow all the time, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is what's playing into New Zealand's hands, in my opinion anyway. Not so much that there'd be favourable decisions given towards them, but more just that
it would be a worrying situation.
Ireland would probably want more of a stop-start game.
If Ireland are relying on the fact that winning penalties is how they can win this game. But I do get where you're coming
you've got to take any advantage you can in this, you know. Who will New Zealand look to target? As Sexton is simply the answer. I think for a lot of teams, it probably is doing that. It's trying to shut down Johnny Sexton. The line-out, obviously, is the other main one that I'd say that they'd be going after.
Yeah, and I'd imagine this is where not having Bundy Aki can be a bit of a problem as well. Aki is a very good enforcer on the defensive side when teams try and get at your 10. Obviously, it's going to be a big game for Robbie Henshaw from that perspective. And like realistically, he's got one game in his legs since the end of last season, so it's a big ask for him. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, the Irish line-out's actually been functioning a little bit better at the World Cup than I thought it would, because obviously there was a big problem throughout all the pre-tournament games. It seems to have improved.
I've been surprised in a few games though at how little teams are actually contesting Ireland.
Yeah.
I'd noticed in the Scotland game and particularly in the Samoa game as well yesterday. I think in the Japan game they probably picked their moments to contest and it worked out well for them. But in the Scotland and Japan game, Scotland Samoa game, I could not get over how little they actually really contested.
And I wonder how
Ireland
much let down to
ball.
Scotland being very disorganised on their set piece, both scrum and line out that day.
Polar Game says Ireland can't expect last year's performance to win on Saturday. New Zealand will have learned from what went wrong for them that day. Absolutely no doubt about that. I think the All Blacks will run them off their feet, says Candy Kane. Ireland have grown into this tournament and are more relaxed than 2015. Upset, I think, says Stephen Greer.
That is something that Rory O'Connor pointed out. Not necessarily that they're going to win for that reason, but he said that the last week has been much more relaxed because the wives and girlfriends have arrived. They're going back into Tokyo now, where they seem to enjoy being earlier on in the tournament when they're there for a few days. That the kind of spirit in the Irish camp is a little bit better and a little bit less nervous than it was before. It's interesting as well, like for Joe Schmidt, this is kind of the perfect game to get in a quarterfinal, isn't it? You're either going out against your home nation and you want to put in a big performance, or you beat them in a World Cup and it blows everything wide open for them.
Yeah, and I know there's definitely an element in this as well where we're kind of, you have to be self-aware enough, I think, to realise that you're picking out the things to kind of suit your own argument. I think this is probably one of those where you're looking back and going in 2015 against Argentina, 2011 against Wales, and even though they weren't even in a quarter-final in 2007, just in general, they would have been favoured to go on and do things. So they were favourites in those two quarter-finals. You're probably going back to 2003 to find the last time they wouldn't really have been expected to win a quarter-final. On that day, they were probably just a young team. I think a quarter-final was their level back in 2003 when they come up against a really good French team. But
and I wonder
this
as well,
is the first time in a long time that they've been up against it. They've been the underdogs going into a last eight game.
And that's why Sexton's found this so weird. Remember he said he kind of found it a bit puzzling that he was finding this negativity, and why this negativity? It's probably because the last couple of World Cups he's played in, Ireland have been going into a quarter-final with a lot of weight of expectation on them from supporters and so on. I think obviously we did all get a little bit excited in 2018 after the New Zealand win, and everyone was...
Naturally.
But Ireland were, you know, playing probably the best in the world on form at that point. And then, you know, things have obviously gone off a cliff a little bit in 2019, and we've maybe just reverted back to the mean of expectation for the Irish rugby team now. And acceptance that they are 10-point underdogs going into this weekend, and that they're facing a side who have been absolutely colossal in knockout games over the last couple of World Cups.
Okay, yeah, that's where we're going to leave it for now. We will be back for the Rugby World Cup show this Thursday afternoon, where we're going to look ahead. We'll have the team news at that stage, Will, for Ireland and New Zealand.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.